We have a lot of people here to testify on the smoking-related bills, and we're waiting for Representative Diane Rosenbaum to come to testify on the first of those bills that will be heard today. So for the moment, I'm going to do a very, very quick... do a very quick work session on... on Senate Bill 238, Council. 238 is a...
It comes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, it comes to you from the Oregon Law Commission. House Bill...
Never mind, Council.
Do you want to just talk about it?
I just
want
to do what we need to quick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 238 and open a work session on Senate Bill 272. My apologies, Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, House Bill 272 comes to you from the Oregon State Bar, and it allows the Board of Bar Governors of Oregon State Bar to establish deadlines for filing nomination petitions. Also sets forth a process and procedure for recall of members of the Board of Bar Governors, and link the Board of Bar Governors' authority to create local lawyer assistance committees to investigate complaints against lawyers, allows the Board of Bar Governors to authorize state lawyers' assistance committees to monitor and supervise a lawyer placed on bar probation or diversion program in connection with bar disciplinary proceeding, requires the Oregon State Bar to determine if the person against whom the claim of dishonesty is filed is an active member of the bar, and whether the transaction rolls out of person's practice of law or in Oregon. The last part I read was from the Dash 4 amendments, which come to you from the Oregon State Bar. And the Oregon State Bar is here to address any questions that you may have in the concerning the particulars of the issue.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Senators and Mr. Taylor.
Thank you. We have already had a hearing on this bill, and I believe the issues that were outstanding have been worked out. Did you have anything you wanted to say?
Only if you have questions. As I think Mr. Taylor explained, the changes that we're really here about today on the Dash 4 have to do with clarifying on the client assistance, the client security fund program, so that out-of-state Oregon bar members who practice here, we will pay claims if if the transaction arose out of their conduct here, not just if they maintain an office here or practice here. And we felt that that was a fair balance to protect the rights of Oregon citizens.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Starr, do you have a motion on the Dash 4 amendment?
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 272.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 272. Is there a discussion? Are there objections? So ordered. Senator Starr?
I move Senate Bill 272 as amended to the Senate floor for the passed recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 272 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Objections? So ordered. I will carry that bill. Thank you very much. Okay. We are going to rock and roll here. We will now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 544. Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 544 prohibits smoking in particular places of employment. It basically eliminates the exemptions that exist now as it relates to tobacco shops, bowling alleys, and similar places, bar rooms and taverns that post no minors allowed.
Thank you very much. I'd like to call Representative Diane Rosenbaum, and I believe you wanted to appear with Mr. Cohn and Mike Penner.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, please. Mr. Cohn, Mel Cohn, and Mike Penner can join Representative Rosenbaum. And welcome to the committee. This is your first time here.
Yes, indeed, and thank you very much, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to appear in front of you. And it's and I'm State Representative Diane Rosenbaum from House District 42 in Southeast and Northeast Portland, and it's particularly a pleasure to be able to appear in support of Senate Bill 544, which is a bill that will impact, I think, probably about as many Oregonians as almost any bill you could be considering this session. This is a bill that will save lives and save money, and that's something that I have said about some other bills that will be coming your way shortly, is that it's in some ways the perfect marriage of bills that are good for the health of Oregonians. At the same time, they have a practical economic impact that is also going to be beneficial to our state. We know that secondhand smoke is deadly. It's the third leading cause of preventable death in the United States. In fact, it kills 53,000 people every year. And the costs that I talked about are also staggering, costing $871 million a year in health care expenses and $908 million a year in productivity losses. But despite these statistics, we have failed to do what we can to protect all workers from the deadly chemicals in secondhand smoke that include arsenic and formaldehyde. We've passed laws that protect people from contaminated foods in restaurants and laws that protect office workers from asbestos. We regulate the level of industrial pollutants that factory workers are exposed to. And yet we've created exemptions to the protections that we offer workers from secondhand smoke, which causes more deaths than all of the other substances we regulate. Protecting most workers, as the current law does, is not enough. It's our responsibility to protect all workers. And, you know, it very often it's the case that we don't know exactly what we can do to protect people. But in this case, it is staggering and startlingly clear that there is a way to prevent very many of these illnesses and indeed deaths. And I believe that is exactly why we need Senate Bill 544. The American Cancer Society reports that currently waitresses are over three times more likely to die from lung cancer than women in other occupations, and 2.5 times more likely to die from heart disease. Many hospitality workers inhale the equivalent of 2 packs of unfiltered cigarettes a day, and that's simply unacceptable. Considering Oregon's fragile economic recovery, no worker should have to choose between their financial livelihood and their personal health. You may hear today that passing Senate Bill 544 will create undue hardship on some restaurants and bars. The evidence from other states, however, illustrates that just the opposite is true. States that have passed similar laws, including New York, California, and Delaware, report that sales receipts are up, the number of workers in the hospitality industry are up, and that people are eating and drinking out more often. And I think we even have some examples closer to home because we have local communities that already have laws similar to what Senate Bill 544 proposes to do at a statewide level, and we've seen the same thing here in Oregon. As legislators, it's our responsibility to balance the public health risk with economic reality and security. Senate Bill 544 would ensure that all Oregonians have the right to breathe clean air at work, a privilege that no one should be denied. In fact, I don't think it really is a privilege at all, but it is something we should see as a right. With all of the evidence from other states about the benefit of being smoke-free, it would be irresponsible of us not to pass this bill. With your help in passing this bill through the Senate, I will be able to be working hard with my colleagues in the House to do the same thing on the House side. I thank you very much for holding this hearing today, for the opportunity to testify, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
And thank you for coming. We appreciate it. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you. Mr. Cohen?
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn. I'm a state epidemiologist at the Department of Human Services here. It's my pleasure to be here today to testify in support of this bill. I believe you have or will shortly have a copy of my written testimony. So I'm not going to read that in great detail, but I do want to hit a few of the highlights. As Representative Rosenbaum said very clearly, secondhand smoke is a major killer. In Oregon, based on physicians' records and death certificates that we receive, over 7,000 Oregonians die every year from tobacco-related causes, and that includes over 800 Oregonians who die from secondhand smoke. Secondhand smoke itself contains a number of very harmful substances, contains over 69 known carcinogens, as well as a variety of other things that are bad actors on people's health. So, you know, perhaps 15 or 20 years ago, there was some question about whether or not secondhand smoke really was a serious health threat. I think from a scientific point of view, the jury is in a big way, and we know that this is a major killer. You know, Representative Rosenbaum spoke very clearly and eloquently about the issues for people about choosing between a safe workplace and having a job at all. We estimate here in Oregon that the exemptions in the current smoke-free workplace law mean that about 35,000 workers are exposed to secondhand smoke in their place of employment, and this bill would solve that problem. In addition, the current Smoke-Free Workplace Act includes a provision that preempts local jurisdictions from passing stricter ordinances. We believe that this current bill, which would remove that provision from Senate Bill 544 and would restore local control over the smoke-free workplace issues. To date, over 2,000 municipalities in the United States have passed laws restricting smoking and work in public places. Prior to being preempted from doing so, local jurisdictions in Oregon were dealing with this issue at the community level. You know, local control is really at the heart of our goal of educating people about the risks of tobacco use and hopefully driving tobacco use down in our state. A powerful change process unfolds when a community starts to discuss these issues and debate them at the local level, and this is a very, very potent force for behavior change. So for all of these reasons, the department is very pleased to be able to be here and support this bill today, and I'm going to stop there. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
We've heard a lot of testimony about how the life-threatening diseases that are worsened or even brought on by secondhand smoke. But what about, I have some written testimony here from someone who mentions the fact that the secondhand smoke severely aggravates her allergies. Could you just say a couple words on the effect on allergies?
Chair Burdick, secondhand smoke is a very potent irritant to the respiratory tract, and that means that when you have allergies, your respiratory tract is generally quite inflamed. Asthma, which is in large part an allergic disease, is one of the diseases that is very, tobacco smoke is a very potent trigger for asthma attacks. It's not uncommon for people to cite exposure to secondhand smoke as something that will have made them have to go to the emergency room or go to see their doctor because of asthma or allergies. So absolutely, this is probably the most common kind of disease that's actually aggravated by tobacco smoke.
So what you're saying is asthma attacks, I guess, can be very frightening, and asthma is on the increase overall in the United States, as I understand it. So are you saying that this could be a potentially life-threatening situation for an asthma sufferer?
Chair Burdick, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Other questions, Senator Whitsitt?
Chair Burdick, that brings a comment to mind. Dr. Cohn, it seems strange within that context that as the number of people smoking goes down, the number of asthma, the number of people suffering from asthma goes up. That doesn't quite fit the equation. The real question I have in mind was we hear a lot of rather large numbers statistically about the number of deaths and the number of costs and so forth. But could you give us some examples of death certificates identifying secondhand smoke as a cause of death?
Chair Burdick, Senator Whitsitt, absolutely. To your first point about this issue of the prevalence of asthma increasing while cigarette smoking is going down, to my knowledge, there is not very good evidence that cigarette smoking is a cause of people getting asthma in the first place. However, for people with asthma already, the cigarette smoke is a very potent trigger for an asthma attack. So I think that's how, at least in my mind, I reconcile those two pieces of data that we have. With regard to what sorts of deaths causes of death might be linked with tobacco on death certificates. For example, heart disease is probably one of the most common causes of death in our state that is often severely exacerbated by exposure to tobacco smoke, either for smokers themselves or for secondhand smokers. We do have a checkoff box on our death certificate here in Oregon where the physician is able to note that tobacco use contributed to this particular death, and that's one of the tools that we use to derive the estimates and the numbers that you're referring to.
Does that box discern between those people who actually smoke and those people who have been alleged are exposed to secondhand smoke?
Chair Burdick, Senator Whitson, no, it does not. The numbers about secondhand smoke are estimates that are based on the research literature and on some formulas that have been derived from the research literature by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That's where those that number of 800 Oregonians, it's an awfully round number. Obviously, it's an estimate. That's where those numbers come from.
So it's more of a modeled set of figures than it is based on empirical evidence. Yeah?
It is based on research evidence, and it's extrapolated from that. There is a modeling that goes on. That's where the 800 Oregonians a year from dying from secondhand smoke comes from. The other number about people who die from tobacco use directly, that does come from that checkoff box on the death certificate. So perhaps that number is less of an estimate and more based on individual counts that we do here in the state.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Barr?
Thank you. Is this bill part of the governor's budget?
Chair Burdick, Senator Barr, I'm not aware of the fiscal impact that's appropriated. So that's associated with this bill.
Madam Chair, there is none according to the report we have in front of us, but I want to ask a question about that next, and not the fiscal impact, but the revenue impact. The statement says the bill has no revenue impact, but yet if we prohibit smoking in workplaces, certainly cigarette sales are going to go down, and we receive close to a dollar a pack for cigarette tax. So it's clearly going to have a revenue impact on the cigarette tax collected. The second would be, I would like to know what happens in bars and taverns and lottery revenues. I think research will also show that in places where cigarette smoking has been banned, lottery revenues have gone down significantly. So I guess I don't. The council, I assume they asked for a revenue statement, and that someone.
Do you have a particular study, Senator Barr, that showed the lottery revenue? This is new.
Well, I think we would have to ask people in areas in municipalities. We'd have to ask the lottery about that in municipalities of areas that banned cigarette smoking in their bars and taverns prior to the preemption. But I believe it will show that the lottery revenues went down dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well,
Chair. Senator Walker?
Do we have anyone signed up to testify from the city of Eugene by chance? Because my city voted to not have smoking in bars and taverns in bingo halls a long time ago, and I would probably respectfully disagree with Senator Beyer that there's been a change, and if anyone's here to testify, they might be able to tell us about that.
It's hard to tell from this. I would hope we do, and I hope people would address also in the course of this hearing whether there's some crossover. If smokers stop going to the bars, do the non-smokers then feel like they can go and not have to inhale smoke? So, and if people can address that. Mr. Cohen, did you have a comment on that?
Chair Burdick, Senator Beyer. The data from economic studies of the impact of smoke-free workplace laws, particularly in places like Eugene, like California, like New York, where a comprehensive smoke-free workplace law has been in place that covers the kinds of workplaces that are talked about in this bill, I think the evidence is very good that the ultimate economic impact is either neutral or actually improving for exactly the reason that you stated, that often these establishments where non-smokers do not want to go because of the smoky atmosphere, they will now come out and more than make up for any loss in business from smokers who stop frequenting those establishments.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Mike Conner, and I'm a bar owner from Portland. Thank you for considering my written testimony this afternoon, and I just have a short follow-up here for you. I'm a non-smoker, and I've been in the bar for 37 years. 2.5 years ago, I had bypass surgery, and the two surgeons that I was working with both took a look at me and said, get out of that smoky atmosphere. And I'm in the process of doing that. But my dilemma is that I'm selling to my son. My son has been working at our bar and stocking the ice bucket since he was 3 years old. The other day I went in the bar and walked back in the kitchen, and standing at that same ice machine was my 2.5-year-old grandson. The smoky atmosphere is just not a legacy that I want to leave for my children. And I hope you can help me with that. I'm a member of the Oregon Restaurant Association, and I think that is a very fine organization. But I do not support their position against Measure 544. And I have talked with several other members, and I think that I am confident when I tell you that there are a lot of other members who would wholeheartedly support Measure 544.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee, Senator Barr?
Thank you. Mr. Penner, what's preventing you from making your bar smoke-free?
Well, nothing, actually, except for in our business, you don't want to be singled out. You want to try and keep the playing field level. And it's a competition. Like, right at the end of our parking lot is another bar. And I just can tell you, our customers that are smokers would go over there and continue smoking. We need to level the playing field and just ban smoking altogether.
Madam Chair, to follow up.
Senator Barr.
Thank you. You said you're a member of the Restaurant Association and you think there's lots of members who would support this, but they're not here. Maybe but the first one here. Do you have water in your facility?
Yes, I do.
What if a lot of members of the Restaurant Association don't support lottery? Should you hear that too?
No, I don't think I would.
Senator Beyer.
No, I'm just trying to point out that, I mean, I'm assuming the association has made a, you know, they've taken a poll of the membership, done what the majority of membership wants to do, and that's the position that the association has today. And whereas there's nothing keeping you from making your bar smoke-free, and Senator Walker said in Eugene it hadn't affected those facilities there. So, I mean...
Well, Senator Beyer, if it... I've been told that it would cut our lottery by 30%. And I tell you, I would gladly take a 30% cut if you could give me a 30% longer life. And, you know, the governor... cutting the lottery revenues, why is the governor then putting all these Indian casinos out who pay no taxes, and they're going to cut into all lottery play? I don't understand that. And I know this is a smoking issue, not a lottery issue. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Other questions?
Madam Chair, I need to respond to Senator Beyer. The reason that Eugene, I don't think, has seen an economic impact is because the whole city is no smoking in bars, restaurants, taverns, bingo halls, the whole city. So Mr. Penner points out a very real problem for those who choose to become smoke-free. Someone will just go down to the bar down the street, and it's not a level playing field. So I appreciate your comments, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. And to the audience, I appreciate the feelings that go in both directions on this, but we'd like to encourage you to wait until your time comes to express your opinion. So I appreciate your consideration. Thank you. Are there other questions?
Just one observation. It seems that we've had two different positions. One in that the removal of smoking from an individual business would reduce the clientele in that business if the playing field weren't leveled. And then the other witness suggested that by not having a smoking environment, you would bring more citizens into your bar or workplace to work. And it seems like we're talking both sides of the issue there.
Well, I think if we can focus as a committee on directing the questions to the witnesses, and we can have our discussion later, because we've got a lot of witnesses to get through. So maybe some of the future witnesses will.
What did you say, Jennifer?
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there other questions? Thank you very much. Next, we will take, we're going to go in panels of three here to try to get everybody who's here a chance to talk. Ellen White, Tony Uliano, and Misty Eichholz. Mm-hmm. Oh, Representative Tomei, are you here to speak on 544? We're going to take a brief break so Representative Tomei can come up here and give her views. We have a tradition of getting legislators quickly back to their committees. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Burdick Committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak so quickly. I know you have a lot of people that you want to hear from, and you're going to be hearing a lot of statistics and information that people will provide to you in a much better way than I can. But I just want to talk with you about... I should know this better, shouldn't I? Chair Burdick, for the record, my name is Carolyn Tomei, and I'm State Representative from House District 41, Portland and Milwaukee. So thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you for coming.
I just want to tell you about a couple of experiences that I had personally. After we passed this bill in 2001, I happened to go to the RAM, and I think probably maybe our new legislators don't know about the RAM, but it's a popular place during the summertime. And I'm very allergic to cigarette smoke, so as I was crossing through the restaurant to go out to the terrace, this was after we'd passed the bill and it was in effect, and I walked by a family that was sitting in the restaurant, and the RAM is sort of in a horseshoe U shape, and so the bar is a little bit depressed inside the restaurant, and the restaurant goes around the bar. There's no wall, there's no ventilation that's different. So as I walked through the restaurant to get out to the terrace, there was a family sitting on the restaurant side, and down maybe 2 or 3 feet were people in the bar sitting smoking, and the smoke was coming up right to these children that were sitting in the restaurant. This is after we passed a bill that we claimed at that time was going to be helpful to children in our families, that was going to keep them from secondhand cigarette smoke. So that was my first experience and my first real annoyance that we had passed a bill that was different from what we'd expected. Later on, I went to Sherry's in Milwaukee, where I live. And Sherry's had a smoking section and a non-smoking section before this bill passed. And I walked into the restaurant, and usually the smoking section was on to my left. And I would always be escorted to the right, to the non-smoking section. So we passed this wonderful bill. So now the whole restaurant supposedly was non-smoking. So the waitress took us into the left-hand side to seat us. And I thought, this is going to be nice. And I sat there for a while. Pretty soon, I smelled smoke. This isn't Sherry's. This is a family, sort of a moderately priced, lower-priced restaurant with all kinds of families are there. People were sitting with their families also in this area. So I'm smelling the smoke. And so I called over the manager. And I said, I'm a legislator, and we passed a bill that required that there be no smoking in restaurants. She pointed to me. Right behind me was a divider, maybe shoulder length high. And the divider was between what was now the area where they could drink alcohol, which Sherry's had not provided before. So now they could drink alcohol. There were a few little gaming games there, a video poker, and they had smoking. There was no ventilation system. There was no wall between that part of the restaurant and the part where the families were. So I just want to say we have a chance now to do a better job for the children in our state. And I very much support this bill Senate Bill 544, and I hope that you pass it and send it on to the House so I can vote for a bill that will provide better for the health of the children in our state. And thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you for coming, Representative Tomei. Are there questions? Senator Whitsitt?
Just a comment. I empathize, Representative Tomei, with your experience. I have my wife is quite allergic to smoke, and I swear she can have a reaction to it from 100 yards away. So it certainly is a significant problem for people who are allergic to it.
Yes, thank you very much, Senator. I used to have a hard time flying because even in those days, some years ago, there was a non-smoking area in the airplanes, but of course the ventilation system was the same, so the smoke would come into the non-smoking area of the airplane as it does in restaurants. So I can sympathize with your wife, too. Thank you, and thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you very much. Now we will have Ellen White, Tony Uliano, and Misty Eichholz come up. Thank you for your patience in allowing Representative Tomei to talk and get back to her House business. Committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ellen White, and I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 544. I've made my living playing music and singing in Oregon since 1980. Like all of you who have chosen difficult but rewarding careers, I'm living my dream and my passion. But there is an important difference. There are no longer any smoke-filled rooms where political deals are made. All of your work for the greater public good is conducted in smoke-free environments. Imagine what it would be like if we were sitting here today discussing important matters of proposed legislation in a hearing room filled with clouds of smoke. It is unthinkable today, I know. Yet for me and my colleagues, we do what we love night after night while breathing in secondhand smoke. I'm not a scientist, but I speak with authority about the way I feel after a performance in a club where smoking is allowed. I can feel the strain in my voice. My energy level is low, and I am often congested. My clothes and equipment smell like smoke. I come home to bathe and take my clothes to the cleaners the next day. Unfortunately, there is nothing I can do about my lungs. Now, please understand, I love my work, and I love the people who come out to hear me. I do think there are ways to accommodate smokers outside. I've seen this work well in smoke-free environments where I have performed in the state and elsewhere. Businesses, smokers, and musicians can live in harmony. I've attached a copy of the article I wrote, which appeared in the Statesman Journal. I've also included the testimony of my husband, John Mullen, who is president of our record company, Amalgory Productions. Thank you for your consideration, and members of the committee, won't you send it to the floor? We'll all breathe so freely with Senate Bill 544.
Wow. Just one question. If I spend some time in smoke-filled bars, can I sound like that?
Madam Chair, I don't think so.
Most people who've heard me would agree. Are there questions for the committee?
Thank you
very much. Mr. Uliano.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak here. That was a hard act to follow, and I promise I won't sing or dance, but I do feel very strongly about Senate Bill 544. I'm a manager of environmental health and safety at OHSU.
Did you identify yourself for the record?
For the record, I'm Tony Uliano, and I'm a resident of Portland, Oregon. And I work at OHSU as an environmental health and safety manager. And I've been in this field for approximately 29 years. Working in a variety of workplace environments, protecting employees, staff, patients, and I've seen many types of exposure through my previous experience working with OSHA as a compliance officer. In addition to that, I teach at Portland State University Environmental Health. However, while I have this academic background, professional experience, I'm not unfamiliar with the venue we're talking about, bars and taverns. I have much experience being a practitioner of the art of drinking beer, and I've been in taverns throughout the country, and I know the culture of smoky taverns. I know pool halls. I've been there, done that, so to speak. So I understand what we're dealing with and the whole idea of how it impacts people. However, I must say that I think this bill is important because I think it does make it a level playing field. It improves the quality of life in Oregon, for which we are so proud of, and I don't think we need to backslide on that. It also sends a mixed message that, as a former compliance officer with OSHA, where we expect employers to provide a very clean environment for their workers. Workers in taverns and bowling alleys and such places like that are not offered. They're not given the opportunity to have a similar clean workplace. Sort of a study that I was involved with recently. I actually thought it would be a good idea to actually walk into a few taverns and measure just two contaminants. As the epidemiologist earlier pointed out, there are scores, hundreds of toxic agents, many carcinogens in
tobacco smoke, and that includes
in the passive smoke as well. And each one of those alone can be toxic. In combination, that's where we have the problem, because people are exposed to many different chemicals, and those combinations are the reason why smoke is associated with lung cancer, asthma, emphysema, respiratory disease. And so we chose just two representative things to measure. And it was an interesting survey. Walked into two what I would consider only mildly smoky bars, and I measured particulates. These are respiratory particulates. This is basically soot, particles, dust, small dust that gets in deep into your lungs. It's the same kind of particulates that EPA is regulating to minimize respiratory diseases and asthma in the general public. So I measured that, and also used an instrument to measure the levels of benzene, which is also a byproduct of tobacco. It's also a byproduct of gasoline and diesel emissions as well. Benzene is a carcinogen, can cause leukemia, and there's a lot of studies on that. The results of this study were, I had no idea what to expect, because we're only measuring two things. Usually we measure carbon monoxide. However, to boil it down, the particulate levels in the tavern were anywhere between 10 and 50 times the level you might expect in an office workplace or a home, and I compared those. They were well above what you would expect to find in rush hour traffic. And this is a place in which staff work there for a full shift, maybe possibly 6 to 8 hours, exposed to levels, as I said, 10 to 50 times the particle count that you would normally expect. So you might say, well, people are exposed at the bus stop to almost these levels, and actually these are well above the levels you'd find in rush hour, say on, I don't know, on Broadway or downtown, any real busy area of Portland or Northeast, 82nd or something like that. These were well way higher than that, and people are exposed for full 8 hours. That is definitely something would be a concern. It's those respirable particles that inflame the lungs and the respiratory tract that causes, instigates attacks like asthma and stuff like that.
The other thing I measured was benzene.
Benzene is a carcinogen, and I did measure in the moderately smoky bar. I measured up to 3.2 parts per million of benzene, and that was only being there for a short while. If I stayed there longer when the smoke accumulated, it could be higher. That, to me, any level of benzene, which is a carcinogen, is unacceptable, and especially if you work there, again, for a long period of time. If you go in and come out, okay, you're no different from anyone downtown Portland, but if you're forced, if you're required to work in a place like that or entertain, it's a lot of exposure, and it's a concern. So that's a summary of my study. In addition to that, a couple of years ago, I was a member of the Citizens Task Force on Ventilation. I worked with Dr. Gary Oxman, and we talked about how ventilation works in bars or doesn't work. And essentially, without going into a lot of details, ventilation is essentially ineffective at eliminating passive smoke. And I know this from my knowledge of ventilation, and I know it from being in many, many places, many establishments. The testimony just before this about Sherry's, I'm very familiar with that. We used to go to Elmer's, and they have a lounge, cocktail lounge. They have a large dining area, and then they have another back area near a fireplace. My wife is asthmatic, and they placed us in the main area, which was only a few feet from the lounge, even though there's a door there, and the smoke just wafts through there. Ventilation systems don't work. You'd have to redesign them at a much more costly, a lot of cost to ensure that ventilation will be purged from smoking areas and separating that from dining areas. And still, that will not protect the people working there. They're still exposed. My experience with this, again, I point out my wife is asthmatic. We have, and I can bring in almost as many people as in this room who refuse to go to clubs in Portland that allow smoking. We've tried it. I've missed out on a lot of really great bands that I love and a lot of great jazz and blues, and I favor the places that have gone smoke-free. I salute those establishments that have broken that trend and have gone smoke-free or have attempted to do something. So I'm finding that these establishments also do quite well. My experience is that people adjust, that the smokers will find places to smoke, that smoke-free establishments are healthy. I have students that are much affected by smoke by working in those places. I have a daughter, a 16-year-old daughter, who's addicted to tobacco due to peer pressure. And she doesn't obviously go to these places, but when she grows up, I would prefer that if she goes to clubs that they're not smoking. So it does not, that sort of condones that activity. Let me see. I have so many stories. Again, my wife is asthmatic, and I've had to go to the emergency room after going into some places. She can pick it up, even places in which smoking is somewhat separated from the dining area. She's highly sensitive. I myself, at a period of time when I was doing a lot of the bars and smoking places, developed pretty severe pneumonia following visits to those places because it inflames your respiratory tract, which allows bacteria to be able to inhabit your respiratory system. So anyway, I definitely support this bill. I think it's good for the state. It's good for the health of everyone, and I do not feel that it's going to impact the economy.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Thank you. Ms. Eichholz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ms. Eichholz. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 544. I'm a server in Tigard Restaurant that has a lounge attached that allows smoking, even though the restaurant is non-smoking. I'm a non-smoker, so I've requested not to work in the lounge, but I'm still required to go in there to run food and to pick up drinks and deliver them to the restaurant. We have a very busy happy hour, and is it possible to not go into the bar? And on busy nights, I find that when I leave, I have burning and watering eyes. I have a scratchy throat. I smell like smoke when I go back to the tables in the restaurant, and I'm contaminating the air there. I've had guests complain that they could tell that I just came from the lounge because of the smoke. I have colleagues that work in the lounge that seem to be sick more often. They complain that it hurts to breathe. They have persistent coughs. And then, I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous.
That's okay.
Well, I got involved with the American Lung Association because I responded to a column written by Margie Bouet. And we did some tests that measured secondhand smoke and the exposure of some of non-smoking servers have when they're working in a smoking bar. And it's using a new product called Tobaccolit. And the product measures a chemical called cotinine. And what we did, and it's on the back of my written testimony, if you look at it, we measured, after a couple days, the waitresses took a sample of from not being exposed, and it was at zero, which represents that they had no cotinine in their system. And what cotinine is, it's what nicotine is broken down to into the body. So by giving the test, it is a good example to see how you've been affected and how your exposure, what your exposure was. Well, after taking the test, after working a shift the next morning, their level was at 2. And 3 indicates that you're a smoker. And just from being exposed one shift, their level was 2 the following morning. So it shows that it, you do get affected. You do get the exposure. Sorry. Anyway, I wanted to present a little challenge to the members of the committee and just say if you have time to go to the bar this weekend and you sit there for a couple hours and it's a smoking bar, just picture walking on a treadmill for 5 to 10 hours in that environment and doing it for 5 days a week. And then think about how your lungs and body would feel, because that's what a lot of these servers and cocktailers and people working in these environments have to experience. And we know that secondhand smoke is bad for you, that there's carcinogens in it. And people do have a choice to smoke, but everybody has the right to breathe fresh air. And that right shouldn't be excluded from people that work in bars and lounges. So I urge you to support and pass Senate Bill 544 so the rest of Oregon can follow in the footsteps of Eugene and Corvallis and California and New York, which have wonderful success stories for their businesses that have done this. There's many studies, like I've mentioned, that show an increase in business and, indoor air and the health of employees are valued in these places, and the rest of Oregon needs to step up and value that as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Are there questions? Thank you very much. Our next panel will be Rich Klingman, Kylie Miner, and Jennifer McKee. Hearing that Jennifer McKee was not going to come. Jennifer McKee has submitted written testimony, which will be submitted as part of the
record. She was a sick child and wasn't able to.
A sick child, okay. Thank you. I appreciate you coming. Would you like to start, Mr. Klingman?
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. I'm Richard Klingman from Salem, Oregon. I'm here to speak in support on behalf of the many musicians who are out there and fear the proven dangers of breathing secondhand smoke. I have a particular interest in this issue because my father, who was also a musician, was diagnosed with emphysema at the young age of 56 and died 3 years later at the age of 59. He worked in nightclubs during a time when we really didn't know that much about the dangers, but that was then and this is now. Under the current law, ORS 433.850, it extended protection to many, but not all workers. Apparently about 35,000 of us out here who are wondering, why did we get left out? we figure maybe the legislature thought that most of those exempted staffs were people who were smokers anyway. It didn't matter. But I think the real heart of the matter is that fear that that extended coverage would hurt businesses. And there's good news about that now. We all know this. Full workplace air quality protection actually began in 1990 in San Luis Obispo, California. They were the first to pass a citywide full coverage, including bars and restaurants. So we've had 15 years now to learn about what the effects of that are on business. And since that time, seven states, nine of them currently have legislation to do this as we speak. Countless communities, New York City and Boston, both very pro-business communities. 10 of the 13 Canadian provinces have passed it. Ireland, Norway, New Zealand, Sweden. What I'm saying is we have a lot of information about the effects of doing this on business, thanks to those brave early adopters who took a big gulp in spite of all the fear and decided to put life before business profits on the risk that it really wouldn't hurt those business. And guess what? There's overwhelming and increasing evidence now that bans are in fact not bad but good for business. Revenues are increasing. I think I know why this is, particularly in areas where there's this level playing field. People go to these places not so much for the drinks or what they can smoke or eat. They go there for the social environment. That's their primary motivation. So if you take one of those things out of the mix, they don't stop going there because it's the social environment that's their primary motivator. It's not the smoking that they're going there for. It's because they like to be there. They like the people. They like the camaraderie that they've got. So when smoking is eliminated, these people still come. They step outside for a smoke. They come back in, hang out with their friends. And guess what happens? People who formerly wouldn't go to these places start popping up. And so business actually increases. They don't really lose the clientele that they had because they're not there because they can smoke. So really, it's a win-win situation. I mean, I don't really understand why there's this opposition. Passing the bill is the best thing for everyone. It provides an environment for increased business, and it eliminates the secondhand exposure for us 35,000 people who somehow got left behind. I acknowledge the fear of change that that business owners have. It's a tough business. You're afraid to manipulate any of the variables for fear that the House of Cards will come tumbling down. But I also recognize that their fears are unfounded. Therefore, I ask you to support Senate Bill 544 based on these documentable facts. One, eliminating smoking is not hurting businesses. And two, exposure to secondhand smoke is creating sickness and death. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for coming. Are there any questions? Thank you. For the witnesses yet to come, I'd like you to be conscious of time. A lot of stuff has been said. If you agree with someone, just say, you can just say you agree with them. I'm trying to make sure that we don't leave anybody behind in this hearing, so I appreciate your consideration. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, thank you for having this hearing and giving us the opportunity to speak today. My name is Kylie Miner, and I live in Southeast Portland, and I'm a volunteer for the Tobacco-Free Coalition of Oregon. Today, I would like to share some different information. This is on the topic of local control. As a result of the master settlement agreement with the tobacco companies, you can now go on the Internet and look up tobacco industry documents that were formerly confidential. And I'd like to share some information that I found about their strategies in Oregon and throughout the country and actually throughout the world. And so I'll be sharing some of those direct quotes that are included in my written testimony. I found over 70 documents from Philip Morris, R.J. Reynolds, and the Tobacco Institute that describe their political strategies in Oregon over the past decade. For example, some of these documents describe how tobacco lobbyists and tobacco company representatives kept an eye on community efforts to protect the health of our communities in places like Beaverton, Coos Bay, Corvallis, Multnomah County, Clackamas County, Baker City, Albany. They're everywhere, and it's stunning to see how closely they're monitoring citizen efforts to protect our health. Their emails, faxes, surveillance reports, and campaign plans and budgets that show how they fought against these local efforts to reduce youth smoking and protect people from secondhand smoke. It's probably no surprise they sent paid lobbyists to testify against local ordinances and to send back reports about local activities. But it's disconcerting to see how closely they've been monitoring us and how hard they fought to prevent Oregon communities from making our own decisions. One of the documents I found is a speech that outlines Philip Morris's particular strategy, and which explains why they're trying so hard to take away local control, which is to protect their profits, to keep people smoking. Their two main strategies are called preemption, which means taking away local control, and accommodation, which means ensuring that the law institutionalizes smoking areas so people can always smoke indoors. In Oregon, we currently have both accommodation and preemption. In regard to smoke-free worksite laws, the Philip Morris document says, if our customers have fewer opportunities to enjoy our products, they will use them less frequently, and the result will be an adverse impact on their bottom line. That's all they care about. And to protect their profits, the tobacco lobby says it perpetuates these myths that businesses will lose money if they go smoke-free. But in private, they actually admit that these claims are just scare tactics. Here's another quote. The economic arguments often used by the industry to scare off smoking ban activity were no longer working, if indeed they ever did. These arguments simply had no credibility with the public, which isn't surprising when you consider that our dire predictions in the past rarely came true. So in public, they use a lot of rhetoric about individual rights to sell their products and to fight against smoking bans. But this is what they really have to say about local control. By introducing preemptive statewide legislation, we can shift the battle away from the community level back to the state legislatures, where we are on stronger ground. And when we pass preemptive statewide legislation, we can stop the Pac-Man dead in his tracks. And I guess they call local cities and communities passing clean indoor air laws the Pac-Man because they're biting into their profits. Even though the industry says that their goal is to see some form of accommodation preemption legislation passed in all 50 states at the state level, they are just as willing to prevent states from making our own decisions by passing federal legislation. Here's another quote. We intend not only to defend ourselves at the federal level, we intend to be proactive. And needless to say, if we get accommodation into the federal regs, the jig is up for the antis. That's what they call anti-tobacco advocates. They will be preempted nationwide, and they can kiss their state and local restrictions goodbye. And back in 1994, this is what the Tobacco Institute had to say about us in Oregon. The state legislature continues to consider changes in current law each session, so we should have an excellent opportunity to pass local preemption. However, Oregon local units of government are protective of their turf and may challenge such a law. Well, here we are now. We have preemption. Local governments don't have the right to protect their turf. But it's 10 years later, and we have an opportunity to give local control back to Oregon communities and to provide a smoke-free workplace for all Oregonians. And so I'm asking you to take this opportunity to restore local control and to put the health of your constituents first by supporting Senate Bill 544. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Here's any papers that are in here. Okay, next we will hear from some people from the opposition. Bill Perry, Steve Rowe, and Andrea Brinley. Hope I pronounced your name right.
Good very much. For the record, my name is Bill Perry. I'm Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Restaurant Association. Chair Burdick and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to address you today. Obviously, a topic that I think most of you have seen me on before. It was our bill that banned smoking in restaurants back in 2001, and you've heard from different people about the competitive disadvantages from local ordinances. And when you talk about restaurant business, that was really the key on why we tried to do it, is from a restaurant perspective, the competitive boundary issue is huge for the restaurateurs. And I would argue that the law in place is a compromise bill that is working. It passed with bipartisan support, was signed by a governor that was a doctor that we worked with, and it protects restaurants where minors aren't allowed. I think keeping children away from tobacco is important for all of us, and I think that is the policy that we were trying to attempt. It is funny, as I deal with other restaurant associations, states that even have, that don't have local governments trying to ban it, have called us wanting our legislation because they think it's a fair working document that tries to protect the needs of almost all the consumers and a majority of the workers. The other interesting point is, you know, we always kind of talk about where smoking's allowed. Remember, even in the places where the bill deals with, it's still a choice of the owner. So it's banned in 95% of workplaces. The remaining 5%, it's still a choice. It doesn't require anybody to do it. And the other standpoint is, after we passed our bill in 2001, there were two smoking bans in bars in St. Helens, and they repealed their bar ban. They had a bar ban in existence, so once the state law was put into place, they repealed it. And about half of Tillamook County, because of the way theirs worked out, had a bar ban, and they repealed it. So you saw local governments at that point kind of look towards the policy that was set by the legislature and say, yeah, let's have a uniform standard. Obviously, Corvallis, Eugene, and Philomath could not do that, but two of them did. I want to kind of talk about three simple issues. First, the freedom issue, the enforcement issues, and the financial issues that Senator Beyer brought up before. And first of all, it's freedom, freedom of choice. And even though what we're saying is freedom of choice in certain establishments, it is banned most other places. Smoking is a legal product. Well, I think our lives would all be a lot easier if you made tobacco illegal, but nobody's doing that. I mean, that's not the discussion that's here. 25% of the population still smokes. Only 5% of the businesses in Oregon allow smoking. So it's clear that the pendulum, so to speak, is swung towards the non-smoker. And everybody has an option under the current structure. There are non-smoking bars, there are smoking bars. So if you want to go someplace to eat, yeah, you do have to go to a lounge or tavern, you can't go to a restaurant, but you do have an option. If you want to go to a non-smoking bar, you have an option. If you want to go to a non-smoking bowling alley, you have an option. Those options are out there. Enforcement. We've talked about some different enforcement issues. Our law is better enforced than anyone else in the country. So I think that does speak volumes to the way it works. Obviously, there's been a few enforcement issues in Eugene, but not a lot. There were still some bars that were allowing smoking for a couple of years. I don't know if they still exist. I'm a Beaver fan, so I try to avoid Eugene at all costs. Corvallis, they had a pretty uniform standard to where there was no enforcement problems, but as you kicked people out in front of the Peacock, OMs, and some of the others, they started creating problems in the neighborhood and the streets with traffic and people complaining about noise in neighborhoods. And I want to touch on that in Portland in a minute. But so even Oregon's law, even though we got two fairly large communities that have banned it, the law right now is pretty enforceable. New York and California, they don't have that same situation. I went down to the USC-Oregon State game, and the first three bars I walked into in L.A. had smoking in it, and they're pretty prevalent. And so even though you can do economic studies on a lot of the things, if the law's not being abided by, it's not really a true economic example. And New York and California continue to have compliance problems in a lot of their jurisdictions. The banning smoking in Portland is a huge issue that we went through in Multnomah County and had a task force. And truly the compliance issue is you deal with neighborhoods on Northwest 21st, the Pearl District. This is going to create tremendous enforcement problems for the OLCC and the residents in the area because you are now kicking these people out on the street. Right now we have a combined area where they're allowed to go in to smoke. They don't congregate on the street and they don't raise noise issues. We're already fighting with noise issues and we haven't kicked the smokers out. So it's going to create some enforcement problems. And then the financial considerations. Senator Beyer touched on them, and actually I gave the documents in 2001 and last year when this bill came up, and I will present it with the committee if they wish. Corvallis has 19 video lottery retailers in 1996 when they passed the bill. It was a 30% reduction per retailer overnight. I mean, it was amazing. The dramatic, say June 1 when that passed, or July 1, the dramatic reduction you had in video lottery sales. You had 19 go down 30%. There are five retailers that are within, you know, 5-10 miles outside that jurisdiction. They did go up 22%. But I think it's an important standpoint. You lost 30% from 19 retailers, and you only gained 5% from 22. So you do get people that will travel. The competitive issue as it relates to bars and video lottery, there's a little bit, but that's lost revenue. I mean, as you look at it, those people could have traveled, but they lost revenue. In Eugene, you saw the same numbers. The problem with Eugene is the city limits, Springfield, and everything else. It's, you know, in Corvallis, I could draw a, you know, a zip code or a city limits, and it was a lot easier, but there are so many Eugene addresses outside. It's a harder distinction, but you do see the Prairie Schooner north of town and Springfield. You saw slight increases, but you saw pretty dramatic increases in the video retailers right in the core of downtown. So it is a combination of lost customers, but it's also longevity of stay, which is where most bars, taverns make their money, is how long these people stay in. You want them to play video poker. You want them to play bars or play pool. You want them to do different things. If they go out to decide to smoke, you're going to lose a percentage of those that will decide, well, I'm not going to come back in. That's where a majority of your lost revenue comes in the bar business. Bingo halls and fraternal lodges, they do a lot of charity work, and you've seen in these areas that the customer counts go down, and that's lost revenue to some pretty good charities, which I'm sure you'll hear from. So is everybody happy with the current system? No. Is everybody going to be happy with this bill? No. You're going to make a different set of people mad, but it's going to be about the same percentage of the population that's mad now that's going to be mad then. The only problem is today everybody does have an option. Everybody has an option. It's just you're trying to anger a different set of people, but you've taken away all the options if you change the law as it works today. So there will be a loss of revenue to the state. I think that's pretty evident. You're going to take away the options, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Now, if you want to let them go first and then me answer at the end. But
what I'm struggling with is you've mentioned it's all from the customer perspective, but from the worker perspective, what percentage roughly of your tavern and bar and restaurant employees provide health insurance for their employees?
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, I don't have an exact number. I will say as you deal with it, I think most of the non-scientific studies I've done say there's a higher percentage in my industry than I think a lot of other industries. The problem you have in the restaurant business is turnover. Servers and others don't stay long periods of time, and that's not any different from smoking and non-smoking. They just don't. And so because of the lack of a tip credit, back of the house pay and other things, you have to try to find ways to get these people to stay, and benefit packages is one of the best ways to do it. So I don't have any scientific examples.
Do any of your members come to you and say, in concern about the high cost of health care and, you know, with more employees getting sick from this secondhand smoke, have any of them come to you and said, you know, this is a problem. Can we do something about it?
Senator Burdick and members of the committee, I think you'd be amazed. One of the most common examples I hear is, I know several restaurateurs that, you know, many of them have been my board members, that actually will pay their servers more to quit smoking. I have a higher population of smokers than any other industry. You know, I'm not proud of it. I don't like it or anything else. But I know one of my past presidents used to pay every employee that quit smoking 25 cents more an hour. I've had employers say they give $100 bonuses to anybody that can go 3 months without smoking.
That's very commendable, but then there are the captive employees who are still being made sick. I mean, according to the medical information we received, I mean, are any of your members concerned about the secondhand smoke impacts, even if they can get their employees?
Yeah, Senator Burke, members of the committee, this is actually kind of one of those interesting. When we dealt with the last bill, I think there's a perspective you have as a customer, an employee, anybody. As you walk up to a business, do you think you're going to run into smoke? And so if I apply at the post office or a grocery store, or I'm a customer at either one of these, am I going to run into cigarette smoke? I think you have a common perspective that, no, I'm not going to. And, you know, it's always kind of a harsh statement, but bars aren't health clubs. They never have been. They never will be. I don't think anybody that either walks into employment, walks in as a customer, goes into a bar to do anything healthy. You drink, you smoke. You know, I mean, I guess when somebody walks up to it, and I don't care if they're a customer or an employee, they're going there because they like the atmosphere. You know, and so to say that they're, I think, being portrayed or pushed there, they walk through to apply, and a majority of the businesses in my industry are smoke-free. A majority of them are. And I would say there's ample opportunity. It gets back to my ending statement. By removing this, you're going to make a certain people are mad today, a certain people will be mad tomorrow. The question is, does everybody have an option today? And they do. This would remove the option for everybody. And so I think it's a balancing act, and that's your decision as lawmakers, is which balance do I want to make? And I would say that at least today people have options.
Thank you. Are there other questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Steve Rowe.
Chairman Burdick, committee members, my name is Steve Rowe. I own Cascade Cigar and Wine in downtown Portland and Cascade Cigar and Tobacco in southeast Portland. I happen to be a retail tobacconist who derives the majority of my business from the sales of tobacco. So under this proposed bill, I would be normally considered exempt because that's where we make our money. We sell cigars. That is our primary business. We also happen to have a small lounge for our smoking customers, primarily our cigar customers, because they have, through the years, had limited opportunity to enjoy a fine cigar, and it's been an addition to our business that, frankly, if it was just straightforward, if we tried to do it as a lounge, we probably wouldn't do it. But we do it for our cigar customers to have an environment where they can enjoy a cigar, enjoy a glass of beer or a glass of wine. We also happen to be on a lottery outlet. And from an economic standpoint, this bill would truly, from my observations of what goes on in the lounge business, would have a very significant impact both on bar owners as well as the state of Oregon. There's many proposals, current proposals to add line games to increase revenues from the lottery. That'll go down because the majority of people that I see playing lottery are smokers, and if they've got to decide whether they're going to go outside and have a cigarette or sit at their machine, that's going to be a tough situation, and they'll finally break down and walk out the door. And so lottery revenues will go down. Tobacco revenues ultimately will go down. The state of Oregon is, I heard yesterday from the Department of Revenue, generates $275 million per year from the sales of tobacco, plus an additional $90 million from master settlement agreement accounts. So that's $700 to $750 million generated by tobacco. The state of Oregon is the tobacco merchant. You get more money than the retailers get from tobacco. The result of that is that we're in this together. You can choose to say, okay, we're going to kind of nickel and dime people down to nothing. That's the legislature's choice. This bill will have a significant impact on revenue flow to the state of Oregon, guaranteed. Mm-hmm. With regards to being a business owner, the bars that have smoking in them now do have a choice. They can choose to ban smoking in their place of business. they can, we hear talk about level playing field. Well, level playing field sort of works if everybody had exactly the same offerings or had the same competitive advantage. But the reality is the restaurant and bar business is variable. Some people come upon the right formula. Some lottery retailers earn maybe $35,000 to $50,000 a year out of lottery, and then you have some places that earn $750,000. There is not a level playing field in that competition by itself does drive it. And this country is founded on that competitive advantage, that whatever you do, and banning smoking in the bars will reduce the lottery revenues in all of those venues because the smokers will have to go outside. So significant economic impacts will occur both to the retailers who are bar owners as well as the state of Oregon. I'd like to talk a little bit about the statistics, the health statistics, because my background is I'm an engineer. I understand studies, and from what I've seen, most of those who are very anti-smoking and focus on secondhand smoke focus on certain studies, and it is outside of the most recent efforts with politics and our budget issues, probably one of the most contentious areas in our domestic dialogue and actually world dialogue. For every study that you find that says there's an effect of secondhand smoke, I can show you other studies that say they are not. And the one that has been cited by the state of Oregon's health division has been rebutted by scientific people who are not necessarily smokers or pro-smoking. They just looked at the analysis and said this is junk. 50,000 people were stated in that study, the Glantz study out of California, to get heart disease. The studies that are out there that have actually looked at it do not find that relationship. In fact, I've got a study in front of me that was just recently published in a British medical journal, which said there wasn't a causal relationship with heart disease. Yet that's 50,000 of those annual deaths in that 55,000 number that the state puts up. The other 5,000 comes from an environmental protection study, which was thrown out in 1998 in the federal court because the EPA could not justify their numbers. They played tricks. They had an answer they wanted. They took the statistics. They manipulated them. They left certain studies out, and then they used them when they needed to. So the reality is statistics can be changed and adjusted and matched to match whatever your goal is. The reality is if I had asthma, would I walk into a bar that has smoking? No. That's a choice. As a business owner, I sell tobacco. Under this bill, I would be exempted. So do I have a personal stake in this? Yeah, actually, if you banned it in other bars, I'd be a very popular location for people to come and enjoy a cigarette or a cigar or whatever they wanted because my lounge would be full. But I'm not going to expand my lounge. I just can't do that. That's not why my lounge is there. It's for my cigar customers. Finally, the last part of this bill refers to local control. I think it's vital in this state and in any state that we maintain a level, you heard the term level playing field. Well, as soon as we allow local communities to say they're going to enact their own laws, and this law, if it were passed by itself, would reach the farthest corners of the state already. So I don't see what that measure does to enhance what's already going to be in this bill if it were to pass. I hope it doesn't, and with that, I'll conclude. Any questions?
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Senator Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a curious definition question, and not for the witness, probably for the council, for somebody from the legislative council, but he brought up an interesting point about retail businesses primarily engaged in sale of tobacco or tobacco products. What is the definition of that, and when does a business change from being primarily a tobacco business to a to a lounge, in what level? So I don't need an answer now, but
that's a good question. Council, do you have any comments on that?
I'm Chairman of the Committee, Senator Barr. Let me just take a look at the definition. I don't know whether the regulations under this area of the OLCC or anyone like that, but off the top of my head, it would probably be the majority of your business, probably, with your retail business.
Not touching it.
Thank you. Another provocative question from our good senator from Malawa. Thank you, Senator Barr. Okay, more questions? All right. Next we have...
Can I ask one question?
Please, Senator Pazowski.
I am wondering, since we've talked about different areas and stuff, I remember reading that in Ireland they did a banning of all smoking all the pubs. I have not heard that that's been turned around, that it still has the ban. Has anyone on the panel looked into that? And I'm just wondering, because it seems to me that... And that's quite interesting, thinking of the pub setting.
I was doing some online searching because as the Irish were considering their ban, they were looking at the city of New York. And the ban is moving forward. There are a number of places which are still exempted. They're allowed. So there is still a level of smoking going on in some Irish pubs. Obviously, in Ireland, it's noted for its smoky pubs, and they are changing the way they do things, and a lot of them have added outdoor smoking areas. The impact is the businesses have to adjust. I mean, the reality is the law, and tax-paying businesses will change.
Madam Chair, I wonder if we can have our next off-road travel just to check this out.
I think it's our duty to look into this, and we will arrange that forthwith, Senator Pazansky.
Madam Chair, if I may, it's kind of an interesting when you look at the heavier beers as far as Oregon is concerned. A lot of the microbrewers are starting to try the non-smoking bar business, and as they get more for their pints and everything else, it's basically created some economic avenues for them to do it. So, I mean, it is kind of, when you think of Irish beer and kind of what's going on in Oregon with the microbrewery, there are more microbreweries, I would say, in Oregon that are gone. You know, McMinimum's is a perfect example. Most of their establishments are non. So as you get in kind of the heavier or more expensive beers, they've tried to go non-smoking, hoping they will be able to contain revenue. But
We're concerned about Magoo's, Mr. Perry.
Funny you should bring that up.
Great segue.
Did I do a good segue here? All right. Ms. Bridley, go next.
Madam Chair and other committee members, I work downtown at Magoo's.
Where?
At Magoo's. I am a cocktail waitress at Magoo's.
Well, you are home. Yeah. You're home.
The smoke at times does get to you, but... When I was hired for the position, I was aware that there would be smoking in the environment that I'd be working at.
Did you give your name already?
Andrea Brindley.
Thank you.
I could go out, you know, and get a job somewhere else, but there is more money in the bar industry, which is nice for when you go to school. That extra tip money really helps out. Jim asked me to come down and speak on behalf because it doesn't bother me too bad. I mean, it's smoky, yes, but... I mean, anywhere you go, I mean, any more bars anymore are pretty much the same, you know. I mean, I can go to the Roadhouse to work if I wanted to, but there's a lot more money in the bar industry, and I think that if there was not a lot of smoking in there, we'd lose a lot of money because, like, the people that come in to play video poker, you know, if they just sit over, some of them just come in, they just sit there and play, and they have their cigarettes or, you know, and then they get up and leave, and they, you know, but... I don't know. I think if you did away with it, a lot of people wouldn't come in. I mean, I see a lot of legislature people that come in after work, and they all hang out and smoke and drink. And
I can tell you. I can tell you, and this is not your job to respond to this sort of thing, but I can tell you from personal experience that you would actually get more business. At least from one person.
See, it's not too bad. I guess I started in the summertime, so a lot of people were outside, and as it gets to be wintertime, you know, they all come in, but the most thing, I think, is the cigar smoke is what gets me. I mean...
Smoke yourself?
Occasionally, I mean, every now and then if I'm out with my friends, but not regularly, no.
And do you ever... one of the things that always... gets me and why I don't go into bars is a habit, and it's not because I don't like wine, I'll tell you that, the smell. I mean, do you have to spend a lot of money on dry cleaning that you might not have to spend?
It just comes out in the wash. I just wash my clothes, but I mean, it's just the same as if you were to work somewhere else and you had to wear a uniform to work, you would go home smelling like food. I mean, if you work at any other place, I've worked at the Roadhouse and down in over here in Salem in high school, and I'd come home smelling like hamburgers and steaks. So I mean, it's kind of.
I don't want to get you in trouble with the people who brought you here, but if if none of the bars allowed smoking and you could still make the good tips, would you prefer that?
Either way, I would prefer not to be around smoke sometimes, but I mean, it's not too bad. It doesn't get too bad at Magoo's. I don't know. I like my job, and I like the people that I work with, and I like the customers that come in, and I would work in either environment, either with if it was smoking or not smoking.
Okay, thank you. I'll let you off.
Senator Burdick, can I follow up?
Please.
It's kind of I've heard this comment about you gain more customers, and I know restaurants that have gone non-smoking and they have picked up more customers. And I think from a food standpoint, it really is a different standpoint because you make money off table turns where you don't here. But I mean, when you look at these studies, I mean, it's an interesting perspective if you look at it from a consumer standpoint. Most people decide to go out to eat. They make that decision, and then they go out to eat. Now, they do make a conscious decision not to go to a smoking place, so if you ban or you lift a ban on smoking, they might go there, but people don't sit at home and go, well, I would go out to eat, except Magoo's doesn't allow smoking. They still go out to eat, they just go someplace else. So non-smoking businesses that pick up customers are generally taking them away from other restaurants. People don't just decide not to go out because one restaurant or bar doesn't allow smoking. They may decide to frequent that place if you lift it, but it doesn't create customers. It just opens up a marketplace for existing customers that are going someplace else.
If I may, just one last comment. You asked about Ireland, but we've heard a number of 8% increase in bar receipts in New York City. That number is actually a total for fast food places, restaurants, and bars. The actual impact on bars was a 10% reduction in employment in the immediate year following. Bar business went down, and a number of bars have closed and gone out of business just because their smoking customers went elsewhere. In one case, typically in New York, a number of them just want to cross over to New Jersey. There are alternatives outside of New York City. So the number that's been thrown out there of this 8% increase is not a real number in relation to the bar business. So just
okay, thank you. Are there other questions? Thank you very much. Let's see if I can dig out my sign-up sheet here. Sean Miller, Jack Elder, and I've actually got five of you who wanted to go together, so I'm just going to call these names and you can figure out who sits where. Ray Gleason, Don Smith, and Greg Hitchcock. Maybe not all of you are there.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sean Miller. I represent the Oregon Charitable Gaming Association here today in opposition to Senate Bill 544. Madam Chair, our testimony today will be directed towards lines 14 and 15, which delete the current bingo hall exemption to which supports charitable, fraternal, and religious organizations around our state. With me today is Jack Elder, who is the chair of the organization, Greg Hitchcock, which will talk about the Eugene experience, which was referenced earlier by Senator Walker, Don Smith, and Ray Gleason, which will also talk about the impacts to vital charitable organizations if this bill were to pass. With that said, and with that introduction, Madam Chair, I could step aside and allow them to testify.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, and again, I urge you to keep your comments short because I'm going to try to get everyone in. And before you start talking, audience and committee, we have some other bills on the agenda today. We will be rolling those over. One of the bills is relating to this general subject area. That will be rolled over. And the work sessions that we had scheduled and the public hearing, the other public hearing. So this will be our last bill. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Jack Elder. I'm chairman of the Oregon Charitable Gaming Association. It is an association of nonprofit organizations that operate bingo games. We are currently exempt under law about allowing smoking in our bingo halls. As of the end of the year of 2004, we had approximately 224 bingo licenses in the state of Oregon. We depend upon the income of bingo, which was given to us by the legislature in 1987 as a fundraising source. The impact of this law banning smoking in bingo halls would be dramatic. it comes down to a matter of numbers. We as bingo operators, as I've explained, one of our nonprofit organizations asked one time, they said they wanted to support the bill last time around to ban smoking in bingo halls. And they said, why shouldn't we do that? And I went to them and talked to their board of directors, and I said, well, this is a social discussion. You know, you as a nonprofit can oppose smoking in bingo halls. If you have the bill passed, you will lose your income source. Now, you have to make a choice between, do you want to fund this, not fund it? How are you going to raise the money? You know, quite frankly, in my opinion, I look at my bingo players, and I walk into the hall all the time, and I notice that categorically there is a large number of them who are really overweight. They eat badly. The food that we serve them is not really good, healthy food. We tried to serve them good, healthy food. They wouldn't buy it. Okay? We can't change their social habits. We operate a bingo game. We have many different purposes. We have sports organizations. We have health organizations. We have youth organizations. We have boys and girls clubs. We use it as a funding source. We've stepped outside of making a social conscious decision because this is our funding source. Amongst one another, amongst ourselves, we discuss it individually. But when it comes down to business, this is a discussion of business. Make no mistake about it. If you pass this law, you will be sending a death knell to most of the bingo industry. That's an absolute fact. Now, how do I base that? 63% of our players smoke. All right? When asked what would they do if they couldn't, 27% of them said they would play less. 64% of them said they wouldn't play at all. 64% of 63%. Now, let's get down to the real numbers. Of 100% of the money that comes into a bingo hall, 73 to 78% is paid back out in prizes. Okay? So immediately that means we only have about 22 to 27% that we can use. About 15% of that goes out into overhead, payroll, rent, electricity, power, the various other things. We're required by law to have at least 5% income. If we don't maintain that 5% income, we lose our license. The Department of Justice pulls our license. We're not allowed to play any longer. If we lose 10% of our players, we will go out of business. Currently, bingo halls have somewhere between 150 and 250 players, sometimes up to 400 at any given session. If we lose 10% of those, we will be out of business. If you take away this exemption, we are going to lose 64% of 63%. That's a lot more than 10%. We will lose our income source. And the charities that are supported by this will lose their ability to assist the public at large. We are nonprofits, so you know, we are 501c3 corporations operating in the interest of the public. With that, I'm going to give up the rest of my time because my point is to say that the industry will be impacted, especially in the Portland area, especially where they can drive right across the river and play and smoke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Elder. And we have a big packet of information from the charitable group that would be affected by this. So I would, and we're running out of time, so I would like to ask the other two, if you agree with him, say so. If you have any new points that he hasn't covered, say them very briefly. I'd like to give you a minute each and then try to fit the other people in.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Greg Hitchcock. I have written testimony. I was a member of a group that conducted bingo in Eugene when the smoking ban went into effect, and essentially that ban put us out of business. Us and another group that played bingo there, our customers went across I-5 to Springfield and played bingo where smoking was still allowed. And you'll see the same thing in Portland as people will cross the river and go to Vancouver, or they'll drive a little bit further and go to the tribal casinos, and there are options for bingo customers.
Thank you. I appreciate your brevity.
Okay.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Don Smith, Executive Director of Chapter 1, Disabled American Veterans. We operate DAV Bingo. I also have another dog in this fight. I'm owner of ABC Beverage, and we sell beverages in the hospitality industry. So I've been watching this pretty carefully. The members that I've spoken to are a little disturbed by this. These are the same guys who went over and fought for freedoms, and freedom of choice would be one of them. And their livelihood by the money we raise out of bingo is definitely in jeopardy over the smoking issue. People have a choice to smoke. They have a choice to come to bingo hall. We've already been over that, and I'll go right to what our funds do for our organization. I'm here to express opposition for Senate Bill 544. A major portion of our funding comes from a bingo game we operate at DAV Bingo that goes to buy the Star Spangled Bands you see running up and down the freeway all over the state. These bands are for any veteran, regardless of DAV membership. Each day the vans depart, sometimes early as 2 a.m. from places like Baker City, Astoria, Klamath Falls, and all along the coast, logging hundreds of thousands of miles per year. Without these vans, many veterans will not be able to receive the health care they need. Many of our veterans cannot drive or are not able to afford transportation. If our vets are not able to get to their appointments, their overall health may be in jeopardy, their claim status may be reduced or denied, and lastly, they may ultimately burden the local social agencies and health systems in their hometowns because they can't get to Portland or Roseburg to their appointments. As you are all aware, the VA system continually faces budget shortfalls every year. Today, the VA facility in Portland is one of three major destinations for the soldiers coming back from Iraq. That facility is definitely overwhelmed and is going to see busier days. Also, our proceeds go to help purchase equipment and supplies that the VA cannot afford, such as recently purchasing a pressure mapping system to aid in the fitting of wheelchairs for paralyzed veterans. For the past few years, we've sent a contingent of VA nurses on our own dime to spinal cord injury seminars as the VA could not afford this vital training. There are many more ways that the bingo money contributes to our veterans. The money we earn in bingo is critical for Oregon disabled veterans.
Thank you very much. And you have written testimony as well?
And I'm done.
Thank you very much. I was looking through here. Thank you, Senator Stark. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Ray Gleason. I'm the Executive Director for the National Fibromyalgia Research Association. We have been in the bingo industry and playing bingo for our charity since 1993. During that time, we have brought in over $1 million in revenue. Some of that money, over $200,000 of that money, we have granted to the Oregon Health Sciences University for research into this illness. We have held four seminars in the Portland area, bringing in doctors and researchers into the hotels and restaurants in Portland, spending their money. And one of the things that has kind of been overlooked is the some of the revenues that the state would lose if the bingo halls closed. Besides the charities that would be harmed and hurt, we do pay money on a quarterly basis, depending on what our net revenues are or what our revenues are for our bingo game, that the state would not have if our halls close. Sadly, people who play bingo are gamblers. They're obsessive compulsive, and oftentimes this goes along with cigarette smoking, which matches some of their personalities. In our hall, we have a completely smoke-free side of a hall, and it is very smoke-free. People can enter our hall, they can buy their food, they can use our restrooms, they can buy the products to play bingo without ever stepping into the smoking side. We have about 50% of the people who do not smoke, as opposed to 50% of the people who do. So I think that if we lose, 63% of those smokers, we will close. And people will be without jobs who do have jobs, besides the charities that are going to lose jobs, and the state is going to lose revenues because we're gone.
Thank you. And you have written testimony as well.
Yes, I do.
Appreciate that. We have a whole packet of testimony from this Charitable Gaming Association, and we will make sure that that gets into the record.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your indulgence. We have three more. We have actually four more. I'm going to take three first. Kevin Craddock, Pat Schumacher, and Jeremiah Hess. And I'm going to give you each 1 minute, too. From, you are all listed as proponents, and I really do apologize for not for having these time limitations, but I hope you understand. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Kevin Craddock. I'm a Southeast Portland resident. I'm the licensee of the Alto Lounge, and I will be very brief, and I will modify entirely what I was going to say. I am adamantly in favor of this bill. I have a non-smoking tattoo on my arm.
Yeah.
My mother has emphysema. I had a lot to say, but, you know, 2 hours, it's good. And I want to address the veterans issue. I think we're on a sad course if we need bingo to care for our veterans and drive them around. And I banned smoking the Alto Lounge last year. Sales went up 40%. I'm also a biochemist. I'm finishing my Doctor of Public Health at the University of Sydney, commencing in July. I totally agree with Dr. Cohen. People that believe that secondhand smoke is somehow not affecting the health of populations are awash in idiocy. It is just, it's irrefutable, the empirical evidence, and I've read, not thousands, I'm too young to read thousands, probably hundreds of very, very well-versed, well-documented scientific... I'm nervous up here. I'm not very good in front
That's
of people.
Okay,
anyways, I'm done. You get my point.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your brevity. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Pat Schumacher. I'm from Southeast Portland. I'm a private citizen. I had to come down here. The sky is falling. These people would have you think. People are going to play bingo whether they get to smoke or not. I think that's pretty well a given. I'd like to address the president of the Restaurant Association talked about choice. I don't have a choice to go to the a couple of bars in Portland that have blues music that I love to listen to because they smoke me out. And I don't think people have a right to kill me when I go into a bar. I'm a private citizen. I don't have an affiliation with anything. But I spend probably an inordinate amount of time in bars because I play pool. It's my hobby. I'm one of the top amateur players in the country, actually, certainly in the Oregon area. And I can't play when I've lost tournaments because I can't breathe. Part of my relaxation technique is to breathe deeply. I take little bitty short breaths when I'm playing in smoky places. I just won a tournament at the beach this last weekend at a non-smoking tournament. It was awesome. I never would have won that tournament had they been smoking. They don't have a right to kill me in bars that I want to go to listen to music, and I have a right to go there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to committee.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor of Senate Bill 544. My name is Jeremiah Hess. I currently live, work, and attend university in Portland, Oregon. Like many people my age, I work in a bar because of the flexible hours and decent wage. I've always enjoyed working in the hospitality industry because of the relaxed atmosphere and most of the time friendly clientele and coworkers. The major drawback, in my opinion, to employment in a bar is secondhand smoke. As a non-smoker, I probably ingest more smoke than many smokers on a given 9-hour shift at work. I come home from work reeking of smoke, sticky from nicotine and tar, eyes burning, and wake up in the morning coughing. As an active athlete, I notice a reduction in energy and lung capacity while participating in sports. I'm all about freedom. If someone chooses to smoke, that's their choice. Yet I feel I have no choice of being exposed to a health risk that I want no part of at my place of current employment. If one were to ask me, why don't you get another job, I would have to respond, why don't you just go outside, which is easier in Oregon with our current economic situation. Many non-smokers have expressed their distaste for cigarette smoke to me, and it's this reason that keeps a lot of people I know from going out to bars. I urge you to consider the livelihood of the 35,000 people in the hospitality industry who are affected by secondhand smoke, and please pass Bill 544. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your brevity. Laura Culberson. While Laura is coming to the podium, we will, for the record, we have received testimony and support from Sam Burns, Sue Fratt, Jennifer McKee, which I mentioned earlier, Ann Trombley, and Jay Harris. and those will be entered in the record. And also to be entered in the record will be testimony on both sides that I forgot to mention but is sitting on our table. We will sort through it and put it in the record. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Laura Culberson. I'm the Executive Director of the Tobacco Free Coalition of Oregon. I'm also up here speaking on behalf of our coalition partners, the American Cancer Society, the American Lung Association, and the American Heart Association. I also wanted to present testimony from the governor's appointed task force, the Oregon Health Policy Commission, who also are in support of SB 544. I wanted to address some of the questions and issues that have come up today. When the 2001 legislature passed what is now Oregon's smoke-free workplace law, they exempted the group of people who are actually the most exposed and most vulnerable to secondhand smoke, that is the people in the bar and restaurants. Most people don't realize that bar and restaurant workers are 50% more likely to get lung cancer from their exposure to secondhand smoke than other workers. While we respect that cigarettes are still a legal product and that bar owners need the flexibility to make choices as to how to run their businesses, we do not believe that the desire to smoke any time or any place trumps the rights of others to breathe clean air. And unfortunately, I don't agree with my colleague Bill Perry from the Restaurant Association that the marketplace is taking care of this problem. In Multnomah County, there are approximately 3/4 of the population are non-smokers, but only 1/4 of the bars are non-smoking. So, A, the marketplace isn't taking care of it. B, this isn't a question about consumer choice. This is a question about choice for workers, and most workers don't have the choice to just get up and get another job. We had an example of a pregnant woman who called us who works in a bar because she has health insurance benefits, Chair Burdick, as you had referred to earlier. She could not just pick up and leave and get another job because of the benefits she got for her and her unborn child as she went through pregnancy, but she was forced to work in a smoky bar. Public health groups are not the only ones calling for smoke-free workplace ordinances. Restaurant associations, representing over 50,000 businesses, now support 100% smoke-free workplace laws. Unfortunately, our own Oregon Restaurant Association is not one of them. But they support these laws because it protects the health and well-being of their memberships and because they do level the playing field for all businesses to operate in the same economic conditions. You've already heard about the economic benefits that some states are getting, including New York, California, Delaware, and most other municipalities and countries that have passed smoke-free workplace laws. The last point that I wanted to address, and I will shorten up my statement because of the time concerns, I'm a little bit shocked that some of the speakers have argued that the state will have an economic impact if people stop buying cigarettes. I hope they didn't mean to infer that the state needs to continue the $1.8 million a year price tag of smoking, or that the state should condone the 17,000 lives lost because of smoking just to continue collecting the $300 million or so dollars that we get in cigarette taxes as revenue to the state. I would also like to applaud the businesses, workers, and musicians who came before you today and encourage you to recognize their courage. Many call us and plead for help to change the law, but they can't go public because they're afraid of repercussions from their business associations, from their bosses, and from their peers. So those folks who did get up and testify today should definitely be recognized for their courage. I think for legislators, the question before you today is not a question of when will Oregon be smoke-free, because the trend is definitely in that direction, but the question should be, why not now? And there's no reason, with all of the economic impact information that we know and the public health information that we know, to not support SB 544, and I hope that you do pass this. Thank
you very much. I would like to say for the record that we had, he unfortunately signed up for the wrong bill, or the related bill, but Chaz Nebegal indicated that he lived more than 100 miles away and had come to testify, and if anyone knows him or sees him, please extend our apologies for not bringing him up. We have a policy of giving preference to people
who live more than 100 miles away, and I just did not have this information in front of me. So thank you very much. Are there questions from the one remaining member of the committee? Thank you very much. We will now close the hearing on Senate Bill 544, and we will move the remaining bills on our agenda, House Bill 2261, Senate Bill 494, Senate Bill 5, Senate Bill 238, and Senate Bill 239. We will move those to Monday's agenda in the category in which they're listed on our agenda. How's that, Council?
That's very good.
So done. And Senate Judiciary is adjourned. Thank you all for coming.